This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. It's a cold, moonlit night in the high desert of southern Utah. On a lonely stretch of highway, a young soldier drives en route from his home in Idaho back to his base at Fort Bliss, Texas. The road snakes up and down over a long series of high ridges and broad valleys. He steps on the gas as the old sedan labors uphill toward the next summit. The date is February the 20th, 1959. Suddenly, there's a brilliant flash of light ahead in the sky. Today, we are talking to David Buher. He is a researcher. He lives in southern Wisconsin. He has been fascinated by the unexplained for much of his life. And his new book, No Return, The Jerry Irwin Story, UFO Abduction or Covert Operation, fascinated me, fascinated Jacques Vallée so much he wrote a foreword. I wrote a blurb. I said, what a terrific job of research. I get many books to read, but not many grab me like this one did. It is a marvelously constructed story that comes to a shocking, sobering, and enlightening conclusion. David, welcome to Dreamland, I believe for the first time.
Well, thanks so much, Whitley. It's great to be on your show.
David, why don't we start at the very beginning of this remarkable story, which could be the first UFO abduction that was recorded in modern times, or something else, something very different. Tell us what this young man did after he saw this light descending from the sky.
Yeah, well, at that point, he pulled over to see what was going on, and he was out of his car by the time it went behind a ridge nearby, seeming to be very close. And where he thought it must have hit the ground, the light flared up and then died down, but he didn't hear even a whisper. It was totally silent. He didn't know what it could be, even though he thought it was very odd, but he assumed it could be a plane crash. So he wrote a note to alert passerby about a possible crash and to notify police, and he left that on the steering wheel. Then to make sure somebody would stop and read the note, he wrote "stop" in big letters on the side of his car using shoe polish. Then he set off towards the crash, and he was just walking uphill, and it was about a foot of snow because this was late winter and it was the high desert. And then it all went black. When he woke up, it was 24 hours later, and he was laying in a hospital bed. And he had no memory of what happened in between. The first thing he said when he woke up was, were there any survivors? There was a doctor in the room when he woke up, and then soon the sheriff arrived and started questioning him. They told Jerry they found him face down in the snow, about a quarter mile from his car, right at the ridge top. And they found no sign that he'd been injured. And they could also find a sign of a crash. The sheriff was very curious after conducting a search operation and including an aerial search the next day for a plane crash. So he wanted to know what Jerry knew, but Jerry couldn't tell him much except for he saw something strange and he went to look for it. They told Jerry that while he was unconscious, he was mumbling the words "jacket on bush." And this puzzled him, but he did say that he was wearing a new sports jacket under his overcoat when he left his car. But that piqued Jerry's interest, and he said, well, where is my jacket? And they said, well, you weren't wearing a jacket when we found you, and the searchers didn't find any jacket. And that little detail turned out to be pretty important later on. They kept him in the hospital for a while for observation, but they found nothing wrong with him. So they returned him to his base in Texas at Fort Bliss. And the Army ran tests on him and looked him over for a few days, but they found nothing wrong with him. So they sent him back to duty. But he kept having problems with blackouts and amnesia, and he ended up passing out when he was walking around in downtown El Paso a few weeks later after the original incident. And he was out for a few hours, but when he woke up, the first things he said again was, were there any survivors? He was right back on the night of that incident, as if no time had passed since then. He had no memory of what happened in between. So they put him in the psych ward at the hospital for, this time they kept him for 32 days. And during that time, they gave him a sodium amytal interview, which is also known as truth serum. When he woke up from the interview, the only thing the doctor would tell him was it didn't work. And that's the only thing he ever knew about it. When they finally released him from the hospital after over a month, things got even weirder, because the next day he went into a trance. He left the base without leave, and he boarded an overnight bus to Utah. When he got off in Cedar City, which was the town nearby to where he had his original incident, he got off in that town the next day, still in his trance. He walked about 6 miles out of town, veered off the highway straight back into the bush where he found his jacket hanging on a bush, his missing jacket. And there was a pencil stuck in one of the buttonholes with a note wrapped around it. So he pulled the pencil out of the buttonhole, unrolled the note, and he burned it without even reading it. The smell of the smoke woke him up from his trance.
How strange. Go ahead, though.
As soon as he woke up from his trance, he started to realize the situation he was in. He understood that he was AWOL, although he was very disoriented. So he knew he had to get back to the town to turn himself in. But he had trouble finding the highway. Well, he had no trouble getting to where he was going, but suddenly he was lost to some degree. He did get to the highway. He got back to the town, turned himself in. And when he talked to the sheriff, who he had seen only 3 weeks earlier, he didn't recognize him. And the sheriff had to refresh his memory the best he could. And then a number of other things happened over the next few months. Some important details, but just to make a long story short, Jerry was once more admitted to the Army Hospital psych ward for a few weeks. And when he was released, the very next day, he deserted his post. And he was never seen again, as the story was told at that time. And since then, that's all we've known about this case.
And except there is more known about this case, and Free Dreamlanders, when we get back, we're going to find out some pretty surprising stuff.
Ever wonder which Whitley Strieber books are available and where you can get them? Now you can go to Whitley Strieber's dedicated book website, Strieber.com, and shop for every Whitley Strieber item that's available. Many of them are available in electronic form, as well as hardcover and paperback. Experience the magic of transformation, the insights of breakthrough, the joy of miraculous journey. Join Whitley on the wondrous journey of that is his life. Thrill to his fiction, the magic of Orenda, the startling power of Alien Hunter, and so much more. Go to Strieber.com now and explore. Notice anything unusual about Unknown Country? When you land on the site, you don't see ads about things you've bought or things some data miner thinks you might like. Why not? Because when you come to Unknown Country, your visit is private. We don't use data miners. We don't report to them. When you come here, we leave you alone, which is as it should be everywhere. Another thing you don't see are video ads that start when you least expect it, pop-ups that interfere with your reading, clutter that distracts you. What do you see? Stories that go in depth, that see beyond where the general media will take you, but don't seek to confuse you with sensation and hoaxes. Plus, a gigantic news archive that's easily searchable with our powerful search engine and entirely free. Unknown Country. The internet as it ought to be. The truth that others will not tell you. Want to keep it coming? Join us today. Click on the subscribe tab on the masthead and get started. Unknown Country needs you, and you need us.
We're back. David Boer, David's book, No Return, the Jerry Irwin story, UFO abduction or covert operation. Well, we're going to try to find out the answer to that question because it's important, given the fact that in the years following this incident, many millions of people, including many, many hundreds of thousands or more Americans, had experiences like this. So who was really behind them and what was going on? David, how do we find you on the internet?
I have a Facebook page called No Return at Forgotten Encounter.
So your Facebook page is No Return at Forgotten Encounter.
Yes.
Okay. And that's how we find you there. And the book's, of course, available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all the usual places, possibly in your local bookstore. Now, David, here we have a situation where he was said to have disappeared. But that is not quite what happened, is it?
No. Well, early on in my research, at first I was trying to get information about what happened to him by sending in FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests.
Right.
And that just seemed to go nowhere fast. So, and that I looked up the original newspaper articles trying to get clues, but then I decided to try to contact any living relatives if I could find them. But in the process, I actually found the contact information for Jerry Irwin. And I just, at first I was in disbelief. I was thinking, well, this can't be that Jerry Irwin. And so, but I decided to call the number I found and just see if it was him. And after talking to him for about 30 seconds, it was obvious I had the right person. And although he was very surprised to hear from me, because no one had ever talked to him since then, he was also, in a way, it was like, well, sure, I'll tell you all about what I remember. He was ready to talk about it.
Now, this is fairly amazing because officially he no longer exists. He disappeared.
Yeah, supposedly.
And then there he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, why do you think they might do that? What would be the purpose of disappearing a person in the record and then having him actually still exist?
Well, I think what happened was this story was investigated by two of the best known UFO researchers at that time, Coral and Jim Lorenzen, the founders of APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. And because they were actually, their home base and their office was only about 90 miles away from where Jerry was stationed when this happened. And they were on it. When they saw the articles that were published, they knew right away that this was a pretty big story. So they covered his story until he disappeared. They found out from his, they call it the orderly room, the administrative office of the army company where he was stationed. They found out from that office that Jerry had disappeared on August 1st of 1959, and 30 days later he was listed as a deserter. And that's all anybody knew after that. They hoped that they would get in contact with him again, but they never did. So one of the really interesting parts of the story is he actually did a really good job of disappearing. He went to the ultimate place for a person could go to if they wanted to disappear. It turned out to be the largest roadless area in the lower 48 states of the United States. And he just happened to be quite familiar with that area. So it's not a surprise that it took a while for anybody to find him.
Now, why would he do that?
Well, that's a great question. And to get the answer, we kind of have to extrapolate, because Jerry himself doesn't even seem to know why he did it. There's a great deal about that time period that he doesn't seem to remember. Many, many of the details of the story that were published, the first time I talked to him, the first interview on the phone, I read those details to him, and he was very skeptical. He said, that doesn't sound right. I think the authors must have taken some liberties. And at the time, I didn't have anything else to go on. And so I kept it an open question. Well, did these things really happen that were reported after the original incident? He remembers the original incident. It wasn't until months and months later, actually it was like 6 months after that original phone interview, when we finally got his Army service records, that I realized, yes, these things did happen, because it was recorded by the Army. So it's his memory that failed him. That's a big question mark. Why does he have so much trouble remembering those events? He seemed to have very good recall of his life before the incident. He seemed to have very good recall of events that starting about maybe a year and a half after that original incident. But in between, there's about a year and a half where his memory is very, very spotty. And that raises a lot of questions about what could be behind those gaps in his memory.
Yeah, and why are they there? Because, of course, we both know that gaps in memory are commonplace in the close encounter experience. I've got one going right now from a missing time event that took place last May, and I can't fill that time. I don't know what happened. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so that's a very good point. I know that you're, from reading your books, you were having things going on since you were a child. But when your book came out, Communion, I think it was it 86?
87.
Or somewhere, 87. Now that was already nearly 30 years later. Jerry's experience may have been, as you mentioned earlier, if it was an abduction experience, it would have been the first one ever recorded in the United States. And although we don't have as much, it's very hard to draw conclusions in this case because of the his lack of memory of events and there isn't much to go on. There's a lot more to go on than there was before, though, from the things that we found, including the things that he said during his Amatol interview, which are...
And what did he say?
Okay, and this was in his hospital records. The doctor recorded, here, I'll get to that page here. The doctor recorded that Jerry stated there was a special intelligence that he couldn't explain to me since it would be incomprehensible to me. These are the words of the doctor, which has directed him not to remember or not to tell me about any of the events in Utah. He says if he tells what was behind the incidents in Utah, there will be a big investigation that he does not want to be bothered with, and also because it will harm many people, and he doesn't want that to happen. He states it all began at the age of 3 years, although he will not reveal how or what began, stating that it would provide a clue to me as to what is behind all this. Also, he informed me that he could leave this hospital if he wanted to by invoking a special force. Okay, so...
A special force? What does that mean?
The doctor, in his comments later, I don't have that in front of me, but he was speculating about what Jerry was saying. To him, it was just utter nonsense, you could tell from his comments. And he wondered if Jerry could be psychotic. However, he also commented that I see no other evidence to suggest this man is psychotic. So he couldn't really explain it away that way. And I think the conclusion he came to, therefore, was that, he said it was inconclusive, but I think what he was hinting at was that he really didn't get any useful information from the interview, but his overall attitude seemed to be that that Jerry was he kind of fabricating all this, or I guess that would be a good way to say it, like for whatever reason he was, as if he was trying to get out of the army or something. Now, that wouldn't be such an unreasonable thing to wonder about, but the record does not indicate that Jerry was ever trying to get out of the army at any point. So that idea seems to be not to really hold any water, if you really look at the record.
What happened to this man on that night? The flash of light, the whole thing, was he affected by some kind of military operation, or was it the visitors? Now, before we go on, Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to look into this a little bit more deeply, because the question of what happened and what happens is a big one. And in my mind, particularly because I've had both things happen. We're going to talk about this in the second half of the show, in the sense that I've had close encounters that clearly and definitely involved beings that certainly could not walk down a street without being noticed as aliens. Whether they are aliens or not is another question entirely, but that's what people would see when they saw them. I have, however, an implant in my left ear that was put there by people. And when we get into the second half of the show, we're really going to go deep into this whole question of the relationship between us and them from a military standpoint. Now, I've missed the break by jabbering away like this, so instead of that, David, what I would like you to do is to sum up where you were in terms of your research at the after you met him. And what did he say exactly about what had happened?
Yes, I spoke with him. I actually had lots of time. I made plenty of time to talk with Jerry about all the different aspects of his story. And he told me a lot about his life. He really never could add a whole lot to what happened around his original incident. He never did recall his return trip to Utah, and his memory of his desertion was very sketchy. Although he did remember where he went, he remembered certain things from that time period. Some very interesting details, in fact. But it, as far as the whatever the agency was that caused all these problems, he was not able to elaborate on any of that. We actually have more information about what he thought from the interviews that the Lorenzans did back then. And those interviews, as well as the testimony he gave to his doctor at the Army hospital, indicate that he himself believed his problems all came from whatever it was he saw in Utah. That's what he believed at the time, even though he doesn't remember that now.
Gosh, that's strange, isn't it? We know what he said he believed was true, and yet now the memory is erased.
Yes.
Strange. You know, it's like that with a lot of close encounter witnesses. With me, I'm like that. That we are somehow edited and end up unable to trust our own memories, even insofar as you can trust any memory. But you really can't trust the memories of close encounter witnesses because they have gaps and emissions. I know people I have seen in abduction experiences when I was fully conscious and awake, seen them.
Uh-huh.
They have absolutely no memory of what happened to them.
Wow.
At all. Or in one case, they had very extensive memories. And then 10 years later, the memories were just gone. Okay, Free Dreamlanders, goodbye, buenas noches. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Love you guys. And there's going to be some nice premiums floating into the subscriber world. So I urge you to subscribe soon and get going, and you may be putting yourself in the way of some very nice premiums in the coming months. David Boer's book, No Return, The Jerry Irwin Story, UFO Abduction or Covert Operation, available online and wherever books are sold. And you can reach David on Facebook at Forgotten Encounter. That's Forgotten Encounter on Facebook.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.